Welcome to Love Your Heart, brought to you by Cleveland Clinic's Seidel and Arnold Miller Family Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute. These podcasts will help you learn more about your heart, thoracic, and vascular systems, ways to stay healthy, and information about diseases and treatment options. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast where we talk about all things related to lead management. I'm Tom Callahan, and I'm joined by Dr. Bruce Wilcoff and Dr. Debbie Kwan, the director of cardiac MRI at Cleveland Clinic and really one of the leaders in cardiac MRI. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be part of this.
We're really glad to have you here. Debbie, you've done so much with MRIs here, and it's been so much fun collaborating. We thought we should tell a little bit of that story.
Yeah, sure. So I think my area of cardiac MRI just really started as a passion when I was in as a fellow here at the Cleveland Clinic. And I remember seeing my very first cardiac MRI and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can't believe you can see the heart with this much detail and particularly scar. I was just so fascinated that you could see it so pristinely. And my research actually started off in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And I was giving my talk on that in a research conference. And I remember Pat Chu raised his hand and said, oh, that's really interesting. Have you ever thought about, or does anybody know what kind of impact cardiac MRI can have in terms of predicting VT in patients with scar? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's an amazing question. And that kind of just launched my whole area of research that I am now currently doing today. And obviously a lot of people who have scar and potential VT also have devices. So that's also been an area that has been a real challenge for us and something that's very exciting too, because there's been a lot of movement recently in terms of image optimization and techniques to really help improve the image quality, which I think is really important because these patients are the most at risk and the most vulnerable. So it's really our need to really address this population.
Well, a quick nod to Pat Chu, who we lost, such a brilliant mind, and you know, you mentioned how he touched your career, and he's touched really so many of us through his brilliant career. So a nod to him. Moving on, though, with the cardiac MRI, you know, you and I actually did fellowship. We kind of followed each other through training and did our training around similar time. And so, in some ways, you know, I've been maybe your nemesis throughout training, right? So putting in these devices, which for a long time would cause problems, right, with cardiac MRI, and so that's a little bit of a backstory too, right? The whole story of how we got to a place where we could actually comfortably get MRIs for the patients with implantable devices.
Yes, that's also evolved quite a bit here at the Cleveland Clinic. We used to have such a barrier to patients with devices where in the cardiac MRI area, we would not touch patients if they had a device, regardless if it was conditional or non-conditional. There was just a real fear. We really have to thank Bruce Wilcoff for really pioneering that. That his work is really the only reason why we even started to have any openness to doing them here. And now we're doing one or two a day. It's really become routine practice. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of things that we've learned along the way. And one simple thing, I remember talking to Roy Chung because he sent us a patient and we scanned them, was safe, but there was so much artifact. The device was like right on top of where the cardiac, the heart was right underneath it. And I had asked him, was there any way that you could try to put the device higher up on the shoulder? He's like, oh, we always do that. But, you know, over time, the device just kind of sags. So what we started to do routinely now, which has made a big difference, I mean, it's something very practical, it's nothing fancy, but just to lift the arm up and put the arm over their head when they go into the scanner. And that's actually allowed us to use our typical sequences and subset of patients where it just really lifts it up like 2 or 3 inches superior to where the cardiac borders are. So that's made a big difference for us. Unfortunately, patients who are older have arthritis in their shoulders, And so sometimes they just physically can't lift their arm above their head for 30 minutes. So that's, there's still challenges we have from that aspect, but the very, very practical things that don't really take high tech interventions can also be done.
That's a great tip.
So Debbie, you were talking about one or two a day, but you're talking about cardiac MRIs, one or two a day.
Yes.
But that's beyond all of the head stuff. We started off with head MRIs and shoulder MRIs and hip MRIs and knee MRIs and such like that. But this is just cardiac MRIs. So we've really shifted our focus tremendously that way.
Yeah, yeah. We actually have a dedicated slot, one dedicated slot a day for devices because we know that there is this need. So we have a slotted schedule so that we know that a nurse will definitely be available for that particular time. Now, sometimes there's urgent cases that need to be added on in addition to that. And so sometimes we are able to accommodate that, but that just shows how much things have evolved and that we have a dedicated slot scheduled now just for a patient with a device.
That's fantastic. Debbie, you know, along the same lines, you talk about tricks that you can use to try and get better images. Is there something that you see with some frequency that you say, I wish they hadn't done that, or I wish they would do it some way differently, you know, from a device, either a lead or implant, you know, tactic. So maybe, you know, making sure the device is a little bit higher, anything else like types of leads or lead position?
That's a really good question. I think the biggest issue with the artifacts is the generator. It's not really the leads. The leads cause a little bit of artifact, but it's very, because they're so thin, the amount of artifact that it results in is very, you know, it's very local. Whereas the generator causes this big susceptibility artifact that spans, could be several centimeters beyond the generator itself. So I think just putting it up as high as possible and ways to anchor it there so it doesn't sag over time, because obviously it can be in a perfect place when the patient's laying flat, but then we spend most of our time upright. And so gravity put down. So I don't know if there's mechanical ways to allow it to stay in place. But we actually right now have been looking into building a database of cardiac MRI patients who had devices so that we can specifically look at that. Are there certain models or configurations that result in more artifact than others? Because we recognize now that we have Dr. Pasquale Santangeli here doing a VT ablation, we're going to get a lot more of these patients. And it's really vital for us to understand how we can better optimize these images. And so one of the things we want to know is predictors, because then what can we do then to address those specific predictors? Sure. But we've done a lot, actually. I'd say that before 2018, 2019, probably our image quality would be 50% likelihood of having adequate image quality. But we've done a lot of work to really try to optimize our sequences so that we can improve that number. And then recently, since Chris Nguyen came, our biomedical engineer, he's also made an amazing impact on this. And then in terms of scar imaging, we incorporated something called wideband. And that's also helped to specifically address the artifact that we see on the scar images. And so the incorporation of that plus arm raising, I think what our image quality can be, you know, as good as if they didn't have a device. But obviously, if we can't raise their arm, I'd say it's probably up to 80% likely that we can get a good image quality. So what we typically do is, or I've told the fellows and the MRI techs, is to look at the chest x-ray. And if they can't lift their arm, the chest x-ray and how close the device is to the heart border will give us a good understanding of the likeliness of our being able to get good quality images. However, if they can raise their arm, then obviously that is a different ballgame. That is going to be much more likely that we can get good images.
So Debbie, a lot of the time the skin is kind of lax. Do you tape it up?
Yeah, so that's what we're trying to develop. Now that Chris is here, to use his engineering skills to see if there's some kind of, can we use tape or can we use something else to kind of move the device up. The issue with the tape is that a lot of the times the device is not so prominently bulging from the skin. So sometimes there's not anything that we can actually anchor with tape to pull it up. If it's like underneath the muscle or something like that, it's hard for us to really have something to grab onto.
When we first started doing MRIs, you're right. There was a lot of, I would say, frank fear and risk avoidance. And it was hard to even start a conversation. This goes all the way back to the 90s. But it's become more comfortable. Still, there's a problem of barrier to not every site is doing MRIs with patients with pacemakers. These types of optimizations that you're talking about, how well established is that this in the MRI community outside of the Cleveland Clinic? I mean, there are some sites that have been doing this for years, but how well established is this in the MRI community at this point?
That's a really good question. I think that there's a lot of variability, and it all depends on how often they're getting their referrals. Because if they have a big EP referral, then they then it's worth that investment, as opposed to just sporadically happening. So I've kind of noticed that the places that are doing this really well are the places that have a big EP presence and a real interest for getting cardiac MRI on their patients. But I'd say it's pretty variable. The one thing, though, is that once you have an optimized protocol, it's pretty standard. I mean, obviously, there's going to be patients that are more difficult, and you have to have really dedicated on-site expertise to be able to navigate that and troubleshoot it on the fly. But in terms of having a ready-made packaged protocol, it's not that hard. You just have to have the right people to know to ask or to get consultation with. And then once that's established on the scanner, it's usually just run it and go. And there's usually a pretty good result from that.
Debbie, how about some of the newer device technologies like leadless pacemakers, subcutaneous ICDs? Do they present any unique challenges?
Yeah, so I think the subcutaneous ICDs are often more challenging because they're bigger and they're usually closer to the heart. So those are harder. Actually, they cause a lot more artifact. But sometimes if their chest wall is far enough away from the heart border, we can see it well. But sub-Q ICDs unfortunately cause a lot more artifact than the typical ICDs. The leadless, you know, they're small, so they cause the local artifact. I think the issue is that, you know, if that area where it's placed is the area where there's question of scarring, and that local area, we won't be able to see much.
Yeah, I was wondering, this podcast, mostly we talk about lead management with lead extraction and such like that. At one point, matter of fact, currently, the indications were in order to get an MRI, you had to have an MRI conditional device. So it was an indication for lead extraction to allow people to having abandoned leads still is somewhat of an impediment. You said that leads were not really a problem, but what happens if you have 4, 5, 6 leads inside? Does the volume of leads make a difference on the quality of the information that you're getting?
That's a really good question. I personally haven't seen patients come through with, you know, because that's one of the contraindications is abandoned leads. We really push back a lot on that. But I would, theoretically, it should cause, I mean, it should be probably additive. So if you have a bunch running together at the same time, the local artifact around that tunnel of bunch of leads running together is probably going to be more than if there's just one. But as long as it's, you know, those leads usually go through the tricuspid valve and then insert into the RV. So as long as it's far away enough from the myocardium itself, if the artifact is mostly in the blood pool, then it, you know, it doesn't really impact things too much.
Okay. Yes. Well, we have been a little bit on the conservative side. We've been moving more and more as we've developed comfort with this, but we still have held to the capped, broken, and epicardial leads as being a contraindication. Although when the indication gets strong enough, which is which is great working with you as a cardiologist as well as a radiology expert. Cardiologists tend to have an understanding of risk benefit, and we've been able to work together.
Yeah. I think as we get more data and experience to, I mean, that's kind of how all of this evolved, is after we had done several, then we look back and say, oh, there was never an event. It probably is going to be okay.
Right. And again, with that risk benefit in mind, clear that the benefit has been far greater.
Yes.
And we've had no serious events ever. So that's important.
Right, right.
Well, Devi, you've had such an impact here and in the, you know, MRI community at large, and really helping advance the field and sort of push what we can do, especially with, you know, patients with cardiac implantable devices. So thanks for all the hard work you do, and thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. It's been so much fun, and I always like challenges. So thank you for always sending us challenging cases.
I will keep doing it.
Pushes us to be more, to really know our craft and learn more. So.
Excellent. Well, until next time, thanks again.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. We welcome your comments and feedback. Please contact us at heart@ccf.org. Like what you heard? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or listen at clevelandclinic.org/loveyourheartpodcast.